Well, we're continuing our second section here on relational youth ministry. We've spent time talking about the burden that motivates us to go spend time. Well, today what I'd like to do is talk about the profile of a youth minister. Once already this semester, we have taken a look at kind of a typical view of what a youth pastor is often seen. The dynamic guy or gal who can play the guitar, who's funny, kids just flock to when they walk on campus. You know, it's just, wow. And all of a sudden, hundreds of students are coming to Christ and this whole big thing is happening. That's unhealthy. It's not necessarily biblical. And it certainly isn't who most of us are in life. And so we've got to go a lot deeper, a lot broader, to look at what a profile of a youth minister who's relational is. And these are some things that I'm going to talk about today and just explain. And I want to encourage you as I do that to add comments or ask questions about what we're talking about. The first thing I mentioned, and these are not in any order of priority, this is a profile. If somebody said, what does a relational youth minister look like? This is what they would sketch. This is who they would draw. First, it would be this: frequently seen at school events, sports, drama, music, etc. Now, at the end of each of these bullets, what I'd like you to do is be asking the question, why? Now, it's easy to assume why on many of these, but sometimes it's not. Let's take that one, for example. Frequently seen at school events, sports, drama, music, etc. Why?
To be on their turf.
Exactly. Mentioned already in your definition, I believe, is you're there. You're on campus where they're on campus. Well, why is that significant?
What's important to them is important to you.
Exactly. And why is that a significant thing?
Because they love what they do.
They do. They love what they do. Say that again.
And they love you.
Yeah, and if you're there, it says, I value who you are and what you're doing enough to come and be a part of that. You know, it starts when they're little, and they're your own children, you know. Do you remember when you were little looking out in the audience? You're in a play, you're singing. You know, I was Santa Claus in a play, and then I was an owl. And I know as I was an owl saying, who are you? That was my one line. I'm looking for mom and dad. You know, where are they? Where's brother and sister? And are they making faces at me to try to make me laugh? This last Sunday, my daughters sang in the church choir. And I almost missed it because I thought they were lined up with the other kids outside, but those were the older kids, and I didn't realize it. And so I step in, and I'm at the very back, and I'm looking. And there I see them, and I'm like, oh. The only disappointment was they're not sitting next to each other, so I'm having to go back and forth like a tennis match, watching each of them. And then finally Madeline, my three-year-old, sees me. And it's quite a distance away. And I'm around a lot of people. And, you know, it's in the middle of the song, and they're singing, you know, this beautiful little hymn about the grace of God. And all of a sudden, this line, which wasn't planned, Daddy! And she yells, and now I am waving to her. And part of me is like, who cares, God? I'm the daddy now. Who's the daddy? You know, we're having a good time. And she's singing to me. And I just, you delight in that. Well, the kids feel that way when you come. In fact, sometimes, and this is when it gets scary, they might be more excited that you're there than their parents, because you're not their parents. The parents are supposed to be there, and sometimes they're embarrassed if they are, but you're not their parent, and you come in. And one time, this was really uncomfortable. This girl in our youth group was a cheerleader, and she was doing her cheer routine, and my wife and I went. I don't typically go to girl like cheerleading events by myself, something like that. I wouldn't do that. I took my wife with me. She was a cheerleader. She's really into it. She thinks it's really, you know, great and all that stuff. And I do too, of course. And so I'm there, you know, candlesticks, dagger, buckets, cheerleaders, whatever, having a good time. And we walk in. And this girl, when she saw us come in, yelled from the floor before they did the routine, Mark! Christina! And her parents were sitting right there next to us. They're like, hi. And they're like, well, we sure didn't get that kind of reception. And I was like, oh, gosh. You know, sorry. You know, what do you say? Reality is I'm not going to either. And I told them that, and we laughed about it. But it matters to them. Next thing, take leaders with you. That's the profile of a relational minister, that they're doing relational ministry while they're doing relational ministry. Does that make sense? In other words, when I walk onto a campus and I have a couple of people with me, whether it's my wife or somebody else, I'm modeling the fact that we love each other. One of the things I always challenge the leaders with at my church is the passage where Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. All men will know you are my disciples if you love one another. I would love it if when we ask students in our ministry, how do you think we feel about each other? If they said, but you guys really love each other. You can tell. I mean, you guys go out to eat after a youth group. You guys are doing stuff together. You obviously love each other. And that's a significant thing. Another profile of a relational youth ministry is that the church secretary thinks he or she never works. My secretary does not understand me. And no secretary I've ever had ever has, except the ones who work directly for me. But the general church secretary, it takes a long period of adjustment before they really understand what's going on. Here's a couple funny things that have been said and I've heard. One of the first secretaries I had at Chesterfield was a woman by the name of Priscilla. And Priscilla was so sweet. But I would hear her on the phone saying things like, "No, he's never here. No, I don't know where he is or what he's doing." Now, how does a parent receive that? Well, probably as a slacker. You know, he's sleeping in. He's lazy. Who knows what? They don't realize that our job, in a great sense, is not a first shift job. It's second, or a lot of times a third shift job. And it's going to be different for different times. You know, if you're out till midnight on a Friday night, you're probably not going to be doing the Saturday morning deal real early. If your youth thing happens on Sunday nights and you're up till 9, 10, out with students, especially like in the summertime, you're probably not going to really be excited about busting in at 8 in the morning, getting ready for a 9 o'clock staff meeting. And so people are going to be confused about really what you do. But a profile of a relational minister is one in which the secretary really doesn't have great understanding until she's educated or he's educated. Then they think it's the greatest thing in the world and usually become a little bit jealous. You know, one of my friends, he was working at a church. It was an Episcopal church. And he heard women describing how he came into work. And one of the elderly women said, "Well, he comes in naked." Well, I don't think he really did, but that translation was he wears shorts into the office. Well, why wouldn't he wear shorts? Because he comes in for a few minutes to work on the computer, return phone calls, whatever. And then he's going out to play with high school students in the summertime, whether it's golf or tennis, swimming. And you don't typically wear something like I'm wearing today. You know, you wear what you're going to wear. And his church wasn't comfortable with that, so they made him basically wear a certain wardrobe to work and keep a closet full of other clothes that he could then change into and leave. And you're going to find that. You have to be respectful of those kinds of things. But just a note, that's what a profile of a relational youth minister will look like. Next, relational youth minister spends at least one night a weekend hanging out with students because they are available. I don't do stuff on Friday and Saturday nights with students. One, I've got a family and I've got a wife, and we really enjoy spending time together. But typically, as a principle in our family, is one night of the weekend, I'm going to be out with students because that's when they're available. And that's almost always Friday night. I go to a football game, a basketball game, or do something with them, usually till really late, 12, 12:30, 1, whatever, and then I come home. My wife understands that, appreciates that. But I don't do stuff very often on Saturday night particularly. So that's important to know. A relational youth minister is on a first-name basis with all the local fast food managers. Well, why is that? Most of your students aren't going to be hanging out at the gourmet restaurants, but they are going to be hanging out at Taco Bell, if it's in St. Louis, at Lion's Choice, Burger King, whatever. And it is an incredible ministry if you can build relationships with the managers. One, it's good for you and for them because they'll give you stuff if you're bringing students and hanging out with them. I'm not kidding. When I did Young Life in the early days, after every Monday night Young Life Club, we would take all the students to Arby's on 39th Street in Oklahoma City. And there would be just flocks of them that came. And I'd work a deal out with the manager. "Hey, you give us free drinks, and then I guarantee you we're going to bring you more business than you'll ever have on a Monday night." And we did. Kids loved it. I mean, they're just down in soda. You have to realize soda for restaurants is the number one thing they make profit on. McDonald's, Coke. Next, anybody know what it is? This isn't necessary for youth ministry class, just fun trivia. Anybody know? French fries, no?
Cheese.
Thank you, you've heard this before. Whatever. He knows all the right answers. You think he knows me or what? Soda's number one. I'm not sure what the breakdown is because they get free refills now, but I think it's still soda. Anyway, it's amazing. I built a relationship with this guy, and he's now my brother-in-law. My sister met him. They fell in love. He's my brother-in-law. He doesn't work for Arby's anymore, but he did then, and it's exciting to think of what happened. All right, let me keep moving. You organize your schedule to be available when students are available while keeping good boundaries. I do have morning stuff that I have to do now. I do have afternoon stuff I have to do, so I can't always be available every time a student is available. But I'll tell you right now, if I was hiring another person to work at our church, I wouldn't be hiring a person to be sitting in the office a lot, doing pretty things with, you know, pictures and clip art. I would hire a person who's going to go and be with students and arrange their schedule that they were. If I was working 9 to 5 in the office and they were also doing that, I'd be questioning whether or not they're really that effective at relationship building, because you need to be available when students are. If they were doing that and doing the relational stuff, I'd be questioning their boundaries. You're doing too much. And if you have to choose one or the other, choose to be relational. The profile of a youth minister is relational, loves a road trip. Proof of that would be if I pulled out some things out of my office, which are menus. I collect menus from different road trips that I've been on with students. So I've got the Rendezvous, which is a rib place in Memphis. I've got menus from Skyline Chili, which is where I will, once or twice a year, load a van full of guys and drive to Louisville, Kentucky from here, which is 4 or 4.5 hours from St. Louis. And we go to see chili dogs. I think I've told you all that story. We eat the chili dogs and we come back. It's, you know, we pick up odor eaters on the way too. But it's just an amazing event. Not because the chili dogs are that good. They are great. But it's because we did it. And how insane is it to pick guys up at school at 4 o'clock on a Friday night, drive to Louisville for chili dogs, and get home at 2 in the morning? What do you think they're talking about? What did you do over the weekend? Dude, I went and ate chili dogs in Louisville. Really? Who took you? Mark, it was nuts. Man, that guy's crazy. It's a great opportunity to connect and build a ministry. I never do it alone, though. I always take a leader with me, and I think that's significant. One, if I eat too much, I need somebody to drive. All right, moving on. Enjoys doing things kids like to do, whether that's mountain biking, music, computers, anything. There's certain things you're not going to enjoy doing. Like, I'm not a huge video game guy, and I'm definitely not a guy that shoots pool or ping pong, any indoor games like that, I'm just no good at. But I still do them if a student likes to do them. But if they're really passionate about it, and I realize this is going to kill me if I really try to do this very long, I'm looking for other leaders who really enjoy that. For instance, Steve Martin, on Saturday mornings, works with our middle school. Steve's got this little game club together. And every Saturday morning, they come together and they're playing these neat games and talking about different things. How many students do that with you? So, there it is. I walk in Saturday morning, didn't even know they were doing it. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. You know, there they are, him and another guy. They're having this huge little thing going on. That's relational ministry. You like that game stuff. So do they. It would drive me insane. I mean, I'd make the commitment once, and then I'd be like, oh, this isn't my deal. But it shows you care about what they like to do. A relational youth minister, I've mentioned already, does not spend that majority of their time in the office. He sees himself or herself as a missionary to a foreign culture. Why would I say it's a foreign culture? Okay, why can't you fit in? Okay, how come? You shouldn't, she said. How come? Okay, you're not a high school.
It's hard to relate with them, but yeah. Your identity is not in being the same.
Okay. What are the challenges then, you know, to not trying too hard to fit in? I mean, let's take wardrobe, for example. And I mentioned that on here later on, but what would I do, or what could I do with my wardrobe that would be totally inappropriate if I was trying to fit in? Okay, suit and tie would be way over the top. I mean, they don't think of me then as a guy who's trying to connect to them, but as maybe the principal of the school or somebody's dad. Okay, now let's go to the other spectrum. What could I do?
I have wife beater, I'm sorry.
Okay, throw a wife beater on. Yeah, you know, years ago, it would have been pull my pants down to here and then have a pair of boxers with big labels on them. You know, I would have been laughed at. I would have been mocked, and it would have been something I probably needed to be had done to me. I need a dress, I think the term I use here is in style, but of my own age. Does that make sense? And it's okay, even if I'm going to err, better to err on the side of not trying to be too cool, but trying to be more of my age bracket than it is the other. Because you can miss the other very badly. For instance, I like to see middle-aged people wearing like certain Gap clothes that are obvious that high school students don't really wear them, but they still think they're kind of cool. And there's times when you're just going to buy stuff because it's cheap and it does look good, and kids will mock you for it. That's okay, too. It's good to be mocked a little bit. It's good for them because it breaks down the walls. Keep going here. You're in a foreign culture by the language they speak. I love hearing adults try to talk cool like high school students, because they're usually about 9 months off of when that term was really cool. One of the movies that really demonstrated that was the movie Wayne's World. When it came out, there were so many different phrases that students picked up on, and this is years ago. And then there are parents and others who would pick those up, such as if, you know, and I heard a mom or dad once say that, and it was so odd and so outdated. It had only been about 3 or 4 months, but the kids were just like, oh. And so they were a leader, too. I had to go talk to them about what to say and what not to say. Other things are you're in a foreign culture by the way in which you act. Now, here's a fine line, and I'm going to talk more about this in a minute under personality, but there are certain things that they're going to be able to do that you really shouldn't do, whether it's the way they eat, whether that's the way they act. And there's a fine line. I mean, there's certain funny things you can do with food, et cetera, that will help break down walls if you're willing to do it. And sometimes people will say, and this could be actually a principle, oh, you haven't grown up yet. And there's a moment where that's going to be a healthy thing. You don't constantly have to be the mature adult. If you're constantly seen that way, kids are going to struggle to connect with you. But if that's, you know, your personality's like that, that's who you need to be. But at the same time, don't feel required to be always the perfect person in terms of your etiquette, etc. I mean, be loose. Have a good time. Make them laugh. For instance, I mean, if you want to take, you know, a Big Mac and, you know, try to eat it in 2 bites instead of your normal 3. I mean, that would be fine. You know, is it gross? Yes. Are you going to do that at a banquet with your wife at a wedding? Hey, honey, look at the piece of cake. Remember our wedding? You know, you're not going to probably do that. But there are times when kids will giggle and it will be fun and it will help break down walls. But remember, it is a foreign culture. You're frequently seen with a carload of kids or in a car driven by kids. That just depends on your life insurance and how much you're willing to risk. For example, in this room, and I won't use any names, I'll tell their initials, Steve Martin. He and I, when he was in the youth group and I was his youth pastor for this one season, was driving his Grand Am. Was it a Grand Am?
It was
the equivalent of it, except it sounded cooler, the Calais. We were at Baskin-Robbins, and Steve got some double-dip ice cream cone thing that was just enormous, and it was like this, and we left the parking lot, and Steve was into his ice cream cone. I mean, double-dip, you know, it was good. I think it's green. I don't know if it was, but anyway, we're pulling out in the parking lot, and I've got mine, and I'm eating it, too. Again, you know, you need to eat what the students are eating, so it's, you know, I'm not eating 2% stuff or ice milk. I'm eating the good stuff, having a good time. And Steve just decides to go. He doesn't really look. He just, let's just go. And so here we are, and he'd been driving a couple of years, so he whips out and turns, and I'm like, ah, we're going down. And so I reach over, and I grab the wheel. Do you remember this? I grab the wheel and move us away from an oncoming car because Steve was focused on the ice cream cone, totally. Just, you know, it was dripping. It was hilarious. So remember, that's a profile of a relational youth minister. You're willing to risk your life to get in the car with another person. And I grabbed the wheel. I've been in wrecks with kids. You know, and I'm not excited about that, but it happens. But I will hop in the car with students and kind of go cruising around. It just breaks down the wall. That is their turf. If anything is, their car is their turf. Get in, listen to their sound system. You know, it's definitely going to take years off your life. It's going to take your hearing away. You know, there's a reason why I have gray hair. All right, continue. You're willing to go where kids are, wherever that is. And you listen to, you read, and watch that which kids are attracted to. But I must say, there are many things I don't watch that kids are attracted to. Certain movies that come out, I don't want to see and don't need to see. But I can read about them and get an idea of what's taking place. And that's important to do. One, so that I can be in touch with what their appetite is. I can be in touch with the kind of stuff that's coming through and help them learn how to filter it. Lots of movies are like that. Movies like Something About Mary, Apple Pie. Any of these movies that are gross, there's a new one coming out that's basically, you know how sometimes you'll have those movies that make fun of like Star Wars or Star Trek, kind of the spin-offs of those? Well, now there's going to be a spin-off of these gross comedies. And the ploy on it is, not only are those gross comedies, but we're going to go where those movies stop, and we're going to go beyond. And so they're going to take it to even a higher level as they're making fun of these teenage movies. Well, kids are going to be drawn to it, and they're going to flock to it. It's a teachable moment for us with them to say, what are your standards? At what level are you sacrificing your own soul, in a sense, to watch what's taking place? And I don't want to get too much into culture conversation here, but know that that's the reality of what's taking place. No, I don't think so, because what you want is kids to see that conviction on your part. Tom Miller, who I talked about already today, he, for instance, said, I'll never see a rated R movie. I knew that. And that was a great message to me when I was in high school and beyond, because I didn't have that same conviction. I didn't because I was young and immature. I remember that about him. So it's good to hold those boundaries. At the same time, he was aware of what was out there. And that's where we become weak sometimes, is when we're not even willing to know what's out there. We become blind to how really gross it is. For instance, parents do that. Whenever I do a parenting workshop and I begin to talk about the lyrics of a song, whatever, suddenly they're like, oh my, I had no idea that it was at that level. And so I don't buy those CDs, but I read about what's out there. And that's why people have been called, Walt Mueller, for instance, the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. Check out his website. It's cpyu.org or .com, I think, one of those. It's org. You can look through all those things, and they'll survey that stuff for you. And you don't need to, you know, put yourself in that situation. Yeah, I think that's a great message to communicate to them, and I think they can understand it. And everyone else have different vices that, you know, some things won't disturb you that will disturb somebody else. Music may not really stimulate or be offensive to you, or video does. And so you got to know what you can handle and not handle. And you need accountability there. But it's important to know really what it is that they're involved in. But at the same time, you can err on trying to be too cool and too hip and know too much about what's taking place. Does that make sense? And so it's okay when kids mention a band to me and I don't know, I don't feel like I've got to rush over and buy the latest issue of whatever CD to listen to it. I just simply can let them laugh at me. All right, what I want to begin to do now is talk about the fear of doing relational ministry. What we just described takes a lot of energy, a lot of effort, and a lot of skill. And because of that, it creates a lot of fear. So I want to create a scenario in your mind. I want you to assume that you and I have just been hired to develop a youth ministry in some church or some community. It's exciting. There's a lot of people. We are either staff being paid or we're volunteers, but the common denominator is we have all felt called to go into this community to do that. We're going to go in pairs to different high schools and try to develop a ministry model that we have created by God's grace. So, you know, a man and woman pretty much for each school, and that's how we'll go out in pairs. Each of you will have a school, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 schools that we're going to be representing and pursuing. They have very little spiritual Christian influence on them, but we are hungry and feel like God's called us to do this. At the state of life where you're at now, who you are presently, whatever, I want you to envision for a minute, what is it going to be like when I have asked you and encouraged you and told you in order to be relational, you've got to go onto their turf. And so you and your partner are now heading towards the school. You've talked to the principal already, and he said you have limited access. You can come at lunchtime and or after school, not at any other time. And that would be gracious. A lot of times school cafeterias are closed. But in this scenario, we're going to say you can. And so you and your partner are driving. It's your first time. You've never been in there. And literally, you don't know any students, not one. I mean, you don't know anybody. I want you to identify for me what fears, what excitements, what anxieties are going through your heart right now as you're getting ready to go do that job. So you guys go together, you two, and then you three. And I want you just to tell me a list of what you're feeling. You're in the car. I want this to be like role play. You're in the car. You're having your last conversation. You're about to go in. What are you feeling? Let's kind of pull back together. I know it was a quick couple minutes, but what were some of the feelings? Again, you're sitting in the car. You're about to walk down the sidewalk, into the main hall, down the hall, into the cafeteria where, you know, 1,400 high school students are investing in what their typical day looks like. What are you feeling? I heard some of the words already, but I want to hear more. Okay. Despair. All right. One word bullets just keep coming at me. Nervous, despair. Okay, good. What else? David. Yeah.
Terrified.
I heard that one earlier. Terrified, you know. Yeah.
I think not one word bullet, but just fear of just flopping.
You know, yeah.
especially for me, I think like just standing by myself.
Yeah.
Just in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Standing there, they're looking at me like, who are you?
Okay. Good. And it gets worse as you get older too. You know, other things. What are you feeling?
We said that just past bad experiences of our own high school experiences kind of coming back.
Yeah.
This like kind of embedded fear.
Yeah.
That's inside of us.
Yeah, that's a great observation because it really will be true. Good. Other things?
There's also excitement. I've just started working with the youth group, and I don't really know any of the kids. And one of the kids actually came and sat at the table with me, and I really enjoyed a great conversation with him.
Was this at your church or at a school?
At church.
At church,
In South Carolina, we weren't allowed to go to school, so it's been totally foreign.
Yeah. And you're not much here either. Some communities you are, some you're not. But
just, I mean, there is that. There are, we talked about mostly negative fear and all those things, but there is that potential love. Well, and even being faithful in prayer and just asking God to guide that time and really trusting that He will.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that in just a minute because ultimately that's what it's going to come down to. All right. Other emotions or thoughts?
I would be very insecure about making just light conversation
with
people I don't know and just start talking.
Yeah. Many people interpret relational ministry as doing what I just said, and it is a critical part of it, but not everybody's called and or gifted to do it that way. And for many years, it's been presented as that's the only way to do it. I've done that a long time. When I was in high school, I became a Christian. After a couple of years of being a Christian, I really got a passion for middle school students and kind of wanted to take Young Life to a middle school. I walked into the middle school campus, Mayfield Junior High in Oklahoma City, with another guy named Sherd Bartleball.
That one could be your icebreaker.
I mean, no doubt. Now, even more exciting than that, his mother's name was Bunny. Bunny Bartleball, and that was not a nickname. So Sherd and I walk onto Mayfield Junior High's campus. The difference was I was still in high school. And when you're in high school, you can be cool and almost idolized by middle schoolers. Well, when I got into college, a little bit of that still existed. But when I got beyond college, suddenly I began to realize that doesn't exist anymore. But even then, the fear of walking onto a school campus where I don't know anybody, that's very real. Social, you know, paranoia is present because it's like I don't know any of these people. And what are they going to think about me? What are they going to say? Some of the main fears that I list are ultimately it's rejection. Nobody likes rejection. You know, I don't care how good a salesman you are. You don't like to be rejected. You like to be able to come back to the office and say, hey, I was 100%. Does that happen? Hardly ever. Tom Miller, the person I'm talking about, said, I don't have those on your pages, by the way. I'm going to read this to you. Tom Miller used to say, contact work, which is another word for relationship building, is 99% rejection, 1% acceptance. And he was saying that because he didn't start doing this until he was in his mid-30s. And so he already was at a huge disadvantage. And so he used to describe that, and I said, it's right. So rejection's critical. Another one is, you know, I'm afraid sometimes to embarrass a student. I know when I was in high school, there was a gentleman who was a youth pastor who walked around our practices and did stuff. And I remember hearing the things that the players would say about this person. And it was sad. I was embarrassed for him. And I could see people who were in his group. It was almost like when Peter denied Christ. You know, students say, hey, Jim, don't you go to his youth group? No, you know, I've been before, but I don't really like it. I'm thinking, Jim, you go every week. You're one of his key leaders, you know. But that's not what Jim wanted to be associated. I'm also sometimes afraid I'm going to get kicked off. You know, am I going to do something to upset the faculty or staff? I'm afraid I'm going to look stupid, which is almost a given. At some level, I am going to look stupid. I'm afraid I'll be laughed at. I'm afraid I won't know what to say. That's going to happen. I don't know if I told you the story of the one boy who he was sitting by himself. And I now know why he was. When I went down to sit to him, I said, tell me your name. And when the first thing I said, hey, can I sit here? He just looked at me. I said, I'll assume that means yes. And I sit down. I said, my name's Mark. What's your name? And he didn't say a word. I said, well, do you want me to call you something else? Do you have a name? And I tried to be funny. And he said to me, well, I could tell you my name. And I thought he was going to say, but I'd have to kill you. But he said, but if I did, I'd have to pull out the knife in my backpack, slit your throat, and pull what's inside over your head. This is before Columbine. And I looked at him, I said, well, that's okay, but I'm not a human. So what you would find inside me would be very different than anything you've already encountered. He looked at me, and he started smiling. Now, I just had to come up with something, because I was scared. I said, you like violent games? And he said, uh-huh. And I knew one, and I was lucky I guessed it. And all of a sudden, we had this conversation. And then I said, well, tell me about school food. You like it? We were having a conversation. God was present there with this guy who was socially isolated, broken, frightened, scared. And there I was in the same world with him for a moment having this conversation. And now, well, not now, he's no longer in high school, but we could go on and have a conversation. But believe me, all the emotions, I was scared. I didn't know what to say. I also think sometimes, this isn't going to work. You know, I'm not going to meet anybody. This is not going to make a difference. And I'm often scared that this is actually maybe going to not work, but hurt the ministry. I mean, students will be like those people when I was in high school that don't want me around. These are all fears that are real and you have to deal with. But reality is, they're the same fears a missionary feels going into another culture where they don't know how to respond. And so something deeper than that has to move us to the place where we can actually do it. One is recognizing that that might not be the kind of ministry that you're called to. But somebody on a youth ministry team probably needs to be able to do those kinds of things. And so if you're the head of the ministry, and that's not you, you ought to be looking for ways to equip somebody to do that. And that's what I want to talk about. Now, first thing to deal with the fear of relational ministry is recognize the importance of your mission. If you can keep before you the burden that there are people in that high school who are literally dying, emotionally, even physically, but definitely spiritually, that has to be the power which causes you to take your hands off the steering wheel as you're sitting there praying before you get ready to walk in. This is worth it. And this is exactly what you mentioned. This is the calling. God will be my strength. He will be what leads me. Pray and have others praying for you. Whenever I begin a new school, pursuing new students, I always call a few people and just say, I'm going into the battlefield. I'm going into a world where I don't know very many students. And the ones I do know, I'm not sure are going to be excited that I'm here. Would you pray for me this afternoon as I do this? Memorize scripture. There's nothing more powerful than to memorize, you know, the passages in Luke as he sends out the 12 and what they were going to experience. You're going out, you know, like sheep amongst wolves. You're going out, do not fear, Isaiah 41:10. For I am with you, do not be dismayed, I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And get the vision of, you know what, I am in a war. I am called to do this. God will protect me. And the Psalms are obviously a beautiful thing there. Find a companion to go with. There's nothing more encouraging than having somebody to go do this with. But make sure you actually do something other than just sit there and talk to each other while all these students are looking at you and you're having this conversation wondering who you are and what you're doing there. You got to move in. How do you do that? We'll continue here. Plan, first of all, to meet kids you know. If you know certain students, go meet them because the reality of rejection is going to be a lot lower. And if they're embarrassed, just try not to embarrass them. And if you can tell they are embarrassed, acknowledge that. Hey, Steve, I can tell you're a little bit embarrassed that I'm here. Hey, you know, Mike, I'm sorry. Am I embarrassing you? Oh, okay, I'll try not to. And they're probably not going to say yes. They might. Yeah, you are a loser. Would you please get out of school? but chances are they're simply going to be polite. Educate, then, before you even do that, the core kids about what you're going to do. Hey, guys, how would you feel if I showed up at lunch one day? You'll find out a lot about how they view you. If they go, man, that'd be awesome. Can you bring us food, pizza, whatever? Then you realize, okay, this isn't going to be so bad. But if they're like, our school? Our cafeteria? Will you let us know what day you're coming? Translation, because we're going to go somewhere else. You know, outside. Then you'll know, okay, I've got other work to do before I walk onto a high school campus. I need to build my relationships with these. I always educate the students about what I'm doing. Hey, introduce me to your friends. And I'll say things like, who are your friends? Who can I be praying for? And then whenever I meet them, I don't say something like, oh, I've been praying for you. Yeah, Lindsay told me about your parents. You know, I don't do that kind of stuff. But boy, to know something about them, it will help you remember, which is a critical point I'll mention in a second. Don't sit in the parents section if you're at like a sporting event. It's okay to sit there and talk to parents occasionally, but if your mission is to go be with the students and you end up in the parents section, you're not doing what God called you to do. You're giving in to the fear, and you're sitting there. Now, if your mission that night is to go sit with the parents and connect to them, that's not a problem. Do that. You'll see some students probably on the way. But if it's to go be with students, it's very interesting that majority of youth pastors find themselves in the parent section. Why? They're not going to get laughed at there. They're going to just kind of blend in. Be willing to go into the group. Especially easy if you have somebody with you. I'll talk about how to do that in a little bit. Stand by the concession stand until you meet some students you know. Now again, you don't want to be standing by the concession stand with a trench coat on, just kind of doing this as people are walking by. Okay? Soon you'll watch security come up around you. You don't want to look like you're suspicious. You don't want to do things that are going to draw attention to yourself. But if you go into a place by yourself, you know some students there already, plan to meet them somewhere. Or just kind of wait. And then if you don't know anybody and it's not going well, this is when you need to have some skills in place to begin to have a conversation with somebody that you don't know. Is it going to be awkward at first? It will. But there are skills that we'll talk about in here that can help you develop conversations with people. Some of the things that we'll do, and I'll talk about in here, are personality driven. And I wouldn't expect you, or really anybody, to do some of the things I might do, just as you will do things that I could never do. And you want to be creative in that. And you want to also know where the lines are. This is where a lot of times we get these stereotypes of what a good youth pastor is who can go and draw in flocks. That person doesn't always have the most effective ministry. They might have hundreds of students coming, but there's no real depth to what's going on. There still could be depth to that, but you got to realize what you're comfortable with and what your personality is like. For some of you, the most comfortable thing you could do would be to go find the students you know, sit with them, and talk with them for 2 or 3 hours at an event. For some of you, it could be really just going and sitting somewhere in the stadium and watching the student who's playing or cheering or, you know, playing an instrument in the band. For some of you, it will be your primary time to go out and connect to lots of different students that you don't know. On any given Friday night, all three of those things would be my mission for the team that we take. I've got certain leaders that are going to go, and they're going to go find a couple kids and let them know I was here. Others are going to go, and they're just going to try to get as many new students as they can find and invite them to something else we're doing. It'll be the spectrum. If you've got a team, you can do that, and that's a healthy thing. But if it's just you, your personality is going to largely dictate what you feel comfortable with doing. For instance, when I'm with a team, I'm going to be a lot more outrageous and aggressive towards non-believers and people I don't know than I am if I'm by myself. Does that make sense? Because there's a sense of support and encouragement. I'll give you a couple of examples of things that I might do. These are going to gross you out, and these are not something I'm saying you should do, but these are things that have worked to get students to not see that I'm not your typical pastor, that the walls can be brought down. Not long ago, David and I and a group of leaders were out. I think you were with me the night of the hot dog. Oh, you weren't there for that night? Oh, you're fired. Anyway, it's hard to fire volunteers. We were out there, and this idea hit. One of the kids I was with was sitting there. He goes, "Dude, can you put the whole hot dog in your mouth?" I was like, "Well, I probably. It's only this big. You know, yeah, I can." So he says, "Do it." So I said, "Okay." So I start putting the hot dog in my mouth. And I'm not getting it all the way in. It's pretty hard. When another kid asks me a question, and what do? Well, I spit it out to answer the question. Kids started freaking out. They were laughing and thought it was the funniest thing ever. And then like, "Dude, walk up to those people and do that." I'm like, "Who are they?" "Oh, they're some of our friends." "I don't know." So they'll laugh. Okay. So I walk up to them, and I put the hot dog in my mouth, and I start talking to them. They ask me a question, I spit it back out. All right? Is it gross? Absolutely gross. Am I too old to be doing that? Absolutely. Do they know that? Yes. Do I know that? Absolutely. But what it's doing is breaking down walls, because I'm not typical sitting there going, "Oh, you know, you shouldn't do that. Really, your mother probably taught you to not chew with your mouth full," or whatever. You know, "Don't talk with your mouth full." You know, those are the kinds of things that breaks down walls. Whenever those kids say, "Dude, come to Crew on Monday night," they look at me and go, "Oh, he's okay. That's the guy that, you know, who's doing Crew? That's that guy that spits a hot dog out of his mouth." That's far better than, "Oh, that's the guy that was talking to people about Jesus right around there." Now, some people would say, "Nah, that's inappropriate. You're teaching, you know, bad, gross things." Well, if that's all I did, and I wrote a book on, you know, how to be gross for dummies, then that would be wrong. But if it's simply a way to connect to kids, it's not wrong. It's fun. Now, there are lines. For instance, I'm not going to spit it out of my mouth 15 times until it's so gross and then throw it in the crowd. Would kids want me to? Yeah, they think that was great. Am I going to do it? No. There are lines, and you've got to know what those lines are. I'll give you another example. I got famous for this one for 2 minutes. Remember the year Mark McGwire was doing pretty well, and he knocked all the home runs over? He was just about to hit, was it 61 was the record?
Yeah.
So 62 would break the record. Well, that night, McGwire was batting, and it was close to this night. He could have done it, but he didn't this night. But we were at a Parkway West football game. And as we're hanging out there in the football game, I knew the guy that was in the booth. And I said to him, he goes to our church, I said, you know what would be funny is if you would announce that Mark McGwire just hit number 62, just to watch what would happen in terms of the crowd. I mean, it'd be amazing. I wouldn't tell him to do it. I said it would be funny, and that's all I said. I told some kids, I said, wouldn't it be funny? And they all thought it was funny. Well, this guy, and he's an adult. He's a teacher at the school. He teaches, his name's Larry Gelbach. He actually went to school at Dr. Chappell there, because Dr. Chappell went to Parkway West. And Larry Gelbach goes into the box and says, hey, to the kid. He goes, announce McGwire just hit number 62. Now, I didn't do this. I wasn't responsible. I really wasn't. I just thought it would be funny. It would be. And when he did it, it was. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark McGwire just hit number 62. The game stopped, and the crowd goes, ah, both sides. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he did it. These guys are like, you're awesome. I'm like, I didn't do it. I really didn't do it. I don't even think it's funny. You know, I really did. But I'm like, oh, I felt guilty. All the lies are here. Well, 2 minutes go by, and they said, ladies and gentlemen, that announcement was inappropriate. It was wrong. It didn't really happen. People are like, oh, you know. But it was a moment. Do you see what I'm saying? And so you've got to be careful about what you do and don't do. What are the standards? I don't do anything that's illegal because that's just not good. When I stand up and tell a kid you can't drink because of the law, and then I'm willing to break laws with them, whether that's stealing things. These are things I know youth pastors have done. Stealing things, the way in which they drive, fences they jump over. And I've done some of these things in the younger years. It sends a confusing message to those who are there. Does that make sense? And so you constantly are walking a line of what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. Always, always do what's appropriate. But recognize what is appropriate for you in terms of, you know, manners and that kind of stuff. Might not be sin if somebody else does something. I have some leaders that do some outrageous stuff. Is it sinful and wrong? No. But when it gets dangerous or so sick that it would end us on the front page of the paper or on Dateline NBC, you know, that's when you draw the line. And there are lots of things that happen, especially amongst guys. There are things guys will do to break down walls in youth ministries that can get really gross really quick. Especially if it's involving your body parts and body noises and body fluids, you need to just say, hey guys, this isn't appropriate and it's not funny anymore. And I'm not going to go into any details of what those are, but if you've seen that happening or you know of some of those things, you need to really encourage those people to think about what they're doing. I'll give you one example. There was a season in life where there was this thing that kids were doing that involved one person pulling down their pants and basically, you know, getting close to another person and doing something nasty, okay? And it wasn't sexual at all. It was just meant to be gross. And these leaders thought it was funny. I was camp director for this one camp where this was taking place. And I just went to the head leader and said, hey, you aware this is happening? He said, yeah, it's really funny. I mean, the kids love it. It's really harmless. I said, well, you know, what if one kid goes back to his mom and says, hey, you know, so-and-so put his rear end, you know, on my head and passed gas. You know, he may really have thought it was funny. But I promise you, his mom isn't calling up her best friend to say, oh, it was the greatest camp experience he ever had. Little Johnny's leader actually tooted on his head. He just thinks it's the greatest thing ever. You see, if I have to have that conversation with somebody, I'm not real excited about it. It's just not what I really want our ministry to be about. Does that make sense? And so there's constantly going to be those lines to think about and draw as you're trying to break down barriers. You need to know what they are, and you have enough wisdom to kind of make the right decisions. Any questions about that? Yes.
Established such a relationship with your senior pastor, but I guess more than that, the session
mm-hmm.
at the church that... suppose you're around a group of those men and
one of your youth members comes up and makes a comment about something that you did, you don't feel embarrassed around those other adults?
Yes, that's a great comment. One, and it takes a little bit of time to do that. But depending on your session and stuff like that, you have enough rapport where they understand that that's just kind of part of the game, part of what's happening. They realize that your identity as a human being isn't centered on that event or the way high school students or middle school students view you as being less mature than the average adult. That's important because in some ways you do need to be less mature than the average adult. In other ways, you need to be more mature than the average adult. And the kids need to be able to see clearly that both those things happen. And you can. Some people go, you can't do that. I think probably one of the greatest comments a youth pastor can receive when he leaves the church is when a group of students would say something like this. You know, Kyle was the craziest guy I knew. He was so much fun doing so much stuff. And we could be out doing this and this and this. And then like in the next breath, also we're talking about the gospel. And we're talking about the Bible. And we're really getting into it. Man, he really lived life. But they understood the difference between, you know, when it was time to play, when it was time to be serious. But there wasn't such a disconnect. Does that make sense? So often there's this huge disconnect where, and I think this last weekend, at the conference we had here, in Two Worlds Under One Roof, they made a great statement of that. That so often, you know, we err on one side or the other. We're really way too goofy and loose and never talk about the gospel. Or we're so serious that life as a Christian looks miserable. And why would anybody want to do that? And so I'm answering your question long, I know. You need to be secure enough in your own identity and have the relationship with people that they understand that, you know, if you're doing stuff, that's probably why a lot of the students like you. And it's okay. If you're going to a banquet, dinner party at the church and you're acting that way, it's inappropriate. People won't find it funny. But if you do it somewhere else, they understand that that's part of it. And you have to communicate that to people. That's where you need to make sure, in a sense, you earn the right to be heard again with the elders in session, that the main comment when kids come back from camps aren't the gross stuff that happened, but the reality of what was taking place in their life. But a lot of times, the silly, funny son stuff, and the girls have their own paradigm for what this looks like, is what allows the gospel to have the power, you know, in their life that it has. The walls have been broken down. Does that make sense? Does that make sense for everybody? Because I want to make sure you're clear. There's a lot of war stories about the kinds of things people do, and you need to be aware of what those are. For me, personally, things that involve nudity, things that involve, as I mentioned earlier, body parts or fluids, whatever, they're not that funny. And the more that shows like Jackass and, oh, what's the other one? Tom Green, the things he does through MTV, the more kids are going to be about that kind of stuff because that stuff's being just elevated to a status of comedy that's really high. And so potty humor and those kinds of things, really we need to just bring them way down. That doesn't mean you can't be goofy. That doesn't mean, you know, if you're with a group of guys in a van and, you know, sudden noises are coming out that it'd be inappropriate for you not to laugh with them. I mean, to get mad at them and say, hey, stop it, that's rude. You know, that's different. Now, if there's a group of girls in the van, you know, I talk a lot about etiquette and about manners and that kind of stuff with our students. They need to learn that. And if the girls are by themselves, well, I've heard the things that they do too. So that's a totally different scenario. And I'm not in a group of girls by myself in a van. So any questions on that? It's really not even part of the syllabus, but it's something that people have to walk that line continually. Well, we're getting down to the wire in terms of this class. Next week, what we'll do is continue to talk about the profile. We've got about 10 more things to look at on here. And then we're going to move into actual listening skills and what does it take to really help others through the art of listening and developing those skills because most of us aren't very good listeners. All right, let me pray. Lord, thank you for the stuff we've talked about today. Just pray that you give us wisdom about what's appropriate and inappropriate when we're dealing with students because there certainly is a line there, Lord, and we want to certainly be aware of that line. We thank you, God, for your grace. Fill us this day, we pray, in the name of Jesus. Amen.